Okay, jetzt haben wir unseren zweiten Gast, Dr. Sam White.
Sind The last time you were with us, you were under a lot of pressure, but it was very obvious that you're a fighter. You don't really look the part of the knight who will pull the sword out of your sheath, but you acted the part, and you were successful, right?
Yeah, I'm working on that, actually. I should say, last time I was here, I got into trouble again.
Really?
Purely for my appearance on here. I got referred back to another tribunal. These people will stop at nothing. And despite the win in the High Court, which we can talk about, of course, as far as I know, they haven't notified me otherwise. They haven't discontinued their investigation. They still haven't paid the legal costs either, which they're duty bound now to do. The same day, I was in the High Court with the General Medical Council. The other governing body, with the National Health Service, had a meeting, which they didn't care to invite me to. And they sent the email, notification to an old email address. They didn't phone me. They didn't use my website. They didn't contact my legal team. So they effectively had a meeting in secret. And they were plotting how to suspend me all over again and how to get me to a doctor. They're still insistent that I must see a doctor.
Why?
Rainer, maybe we should get do a brief summary for people who maybe have not, are not familiar with the story.
Yeah. Let's start at the beginning, Sam. I wanted to delve right in because I could see that you had made great progress. But yeah, let's start at the beginning so that everybody understands what this is about.
Yeah. At the very beginning when I got suspended from,
Just a brief summary,
I've been a doctor 17 years now, working entirely independently, and I resigned at the beginning of the year. The last sort of nail in the coffin, if you like, was that I wasn't prepared to take part in administering the vaccines, that are not vaccines, they're gene therapies. And I was sick of the innumerable lies that have been told by the government, the health service, and frankly, the participation of many medics in what's going on at the moment. In June of this year, I released a video calling out those things. It was only about 8 minutes, but that earned me a suspension from the National Health Service, and then subsequently the General Medical Council. And the opposing voice in those sides, if you like, have throughout, it's been about destroy the messenger rather than consider any aspect of the message, rather than investigate the countless deaths we now see as a result of what's going on. They're playing out of the Rules for Radicals book, throughout. And it's really been a dirty tricks smear campaign. Likewise, when I went to have a tribunal, we submitted hundreds and hundreds of pages of experts, including peer-reviewed literature, expert witness testimony from around the world. Some of the top people came together, like they have done now for the ongoing investigations we've got. And they didn't consider any of it. So we took the General Medical Council to the High Court, the Royal Courts of Justice. And it was decided that there'd been a breach of their lawful responsibility to consider my right to be a part of society and my right to free speech. Now, for me, that was an important case because I could have accepted the conditions that were imposed on me. I could have shut up and gone quietly into the night. But what's happened to me has happened in the UK to other doctors, but around the world as well. Notably, especially in the Commonwealth countries, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the UK. So this was about making the way safe for other doctors to be able to come forward without fear of these dirty tricks smear campaign that they instigate, without fear of losing their livelihoods, because many have got families to support. And that started to happen. We started to have more doctors come forward and talk about what they've seen, and nurses and midwives, unfortunately, as well. So that's where I'm at. And as I say, there was a lot of scheming in the interim period between the first decision to suspend me and then the High Court hearing, where for appearing here before, and presumably this committee is an international committee, it's beyond the jurisdiction of the UK as far as I'm aware, and hearing expert testimony from around the world, from doctors, scientists, lawyers, economists, about crimes against humanity, essentially. But the GMC doesn't care about that. The National Health Service doesn't care about that. So we got this win in the High Court, and we've capitalized on that. In that time, there's been three letters which have been done publicly, calling out what's going on. And we also have now a criminal investigation instigated here in the UK as of the 20th of December. Mm-hmm. And I'll just read out the crime reference number for other people in the UK to make a note of. It's 602-9679/21. So we're actually asking people who've perhaps lost a loved one or been injured to come forward. They may be able to get their own crime reference number, but if not, they can put it on our tab, if you like. Because we need everyone to stand together now and firmly put a stop to this. Mm-hmm. We've also got pending civil action for gross negligence manslaughter against the medicines regulator in the UK, which is the MHRA, alongside also the General Medical Council as well. The General Medical Council is charged with guiding doctors and protecting patients. On both of those things, they've failed abysmally. So that's a brief summary of where we're at. There's been a lot happen, and you'll be aware as well that the UK now has an additional referral to The Hague, to the International Criminal Court, alleging crimes against humanity also.
Who's behind that?
A lawyer called Hannah Rose. Mm-hmm. She did write to myself and my solicitor to help with that, and we offered to, but I think she had enough to do the initial submission. Mm-hmm. And Mike Yeadon, I believe you know, is on there as an expert witness, and John O'Looney as well.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah. It's people you know who are well known now. Mm-hmm. As well. The ICC has had a referral from the UK as of early last year as well, and that has a number. I did see it initially, but that hasn't moved anywhere. So I think we still need to proceed with what's happening in the national courts, potentially both from a civil aspect and criminal. But the criminal case, provided that flies and the Crown Prosecution Service agrees to prosecute, that will take precedence over any civil action. So there's a lot happening. And I think that the High Court win has given everyone, you know, the impetus to drive this forward. Yeah. Along with what seems like more of an awakening in the general public about what's going on, and hopefully the medical profession. It's myself and other doctors, you probably know from medical doctors for COVID ethics, yeah, we've said all along that when governments around the world acted completely unlawfully with no regard for human rights in introducing the legislation that they did last year, it should have been doctors that stood up together and put a stop to it. And I honestly thought in December last year that other doctors around me, when the Pfizer vaccine was rolled out, would say, we're not going to be a part of this. There's no way. This is not safe. The trial was, frankly, absurd and a joke.
Yeah.
But when that didn't happen, as you know, I just said, I've got to go. I'm not going to be a part of this.
So what is the attitude, you know, with your colleagues in the medical profession in the UK at the moment? I mean, is there like an awakening going on, or are they really stuck? I mean, we see both things here at the same time. You know, there's a lot of people coming out to us for, you know, from the health system. But at the same time, some seem really be like obsessively stuck on the narrative and are even looking to force everyone to get vaccinated, like even before it's, I mean, they now, you know, from mid-March on, they have to not get vaccinated in the hospitals, but they have to prove, they have to present a green pass, or they have to say, I'm not vaccinated, you know, but they, at that point, they only have to gather the information, you know, come March 15th. But it's at the moment that some are really like over complying with this regulation, and they're already like forcing people to get vaccinated. And you know, it's a gigantic pressure for the people like in the healthcare system at the moment. So what's your observation?
There's still a minority, and it's painfully slow. I mean, I thought that the medical profession would have ended this a long time ago. And there will ultimately, whichever way, be an awakening among the profession as to what crimes essentially they've been a part of. I've got, for instance, a young girl here that I'll name her. She said it's okay to share her name, Chelsea Dixon. She's going to go public with this as well. She had her first vaccine as a care worker. She's no longer menstruating, so she might be infertile. We don't yet know. And she's got neurological symptoms as well. They introduced the mandate merely a few weeks ago, really, for care home workers to be vaccinated. They're a vulnerable group. They're underpaid and they're not unionized at all. There's no union to support them as such. She's been injured, perhaps permanently disabled, by a vaccine. Yet she's not able to claim from her doctor an exemption to say that she shouldn't have any more, because the doctors have been given a very, very narrow set of guidelines to follow. And it only includes basically extreme cases. So unless she was very obviously disabled, you know, to the naked eye, if you like, she's not getting an exemption. Now, in doing that, what the doctors are saying is that they're following the guidance, but they're not following the law, because she does not give her free and informed consent to have another vaccination. And why should she? The doctors have completely forgotten their legal responsibility, as well as their duty, even under their statutory responsibility issued by the General Medical Council under good medical practice, that patients have a right to free and informed consent. And on that point, I should say that the crux of the argument in the High Court, and by default the NHS, was that when I aired my views publicly, I shared them with an uninformed public. So the General Medical Council regards the public as uninformed and not capable whatsoever of being part of the debate or hearing an alternative dialogue. How then is that same public able to give their free and informed consent? It was absurd. And You know, and that's the situation we've got. We've got doctors following guidance, ignoring the law, ignoring medical ethics, and their duty to do no harm. I'm ashamed, honestly, of what the profession has become. And I'm not going to go back and work for the health service. It's far too broken if that's its guidance. And as I said, we issued 3 public disclosure letters, and that's part of awakening people, including members of the profession. They are slowly coming forward. Some wish to remain anonymous, but they're going to have a very, very painful and hard landing when they realize what they've been a part of, and potentially they're going to be victims too, because they were first in line to take these gene therapies. So the public interest disclosures that we've done, the first one was to the CEO of the NHS, the current CEO. We'd written to the previous CEO in July and said, all of what I've said is backed up by the evidence. Here it is. So we gave an update, and it was a public disclosure one as well, to say, since we last spoke, this many more people have died. How many deaths is enough for you? Now, some people are above the law because these people won't even reply to a letter from a legal firm. So that's why we've got to really up the ante, and that's what we've done with both the civil and criminal aspect as well. A subsequent letter, which was requesting that the CEO of the General Medical Council resign, because they have a two-tier approach to how they investigate doctors. If you follow the government narrative, you're going to be okay, whatever comes by way of complaint against you. So there's a TV doctor here in the UK, Dr. Hilary Jones. He's been on television, and he had 1,400 complaints to the telecoms regulator, Ofcom, and complaints also to the General Medical Council directly. He's been on television saying that the so-called vaccine is win-win-win, that complications are highly rare, completely misunderestimating the risk. And that's gone out to millions and millions of people. And yet the GMC came back and said that his comments were not offensive, that they haven't applied the right test. So it wasn't so much that his comments could be considered offensive. That's by the by. But his comments were frankly untrue and not backed by science. Compare that to how other doctors in the UK and around the world get treated if they say what I said, that there's safe, effective treatments. The PCR should not be used whatsoever, really, but especially without clinical assessment of a patient, and that these are gene-based therapies, highly likely to cause harm. The trials were a joke, and when they tried, vaccinating animals, the first SARS-CoV-1 virus, they all died of antibody-dependent enhancement. And now we've got in the UK, if you look at the yellow card data, we've got over 1,800 deaths. We think there's an underreporting factor. So we've got a team of experts now of about 11. So we're looking at 20,000 deaths, most probably, in the UK from these vaccines. When is enough enough?
Well, can I add to this? Because we just had an information from a professor, Wallach. He mentioned to us that they have done some poll. And in fact, they found out that I think it's an under reporting here of like 99%.
Wow.
So it's really outrageous, because they did some, with a larger group, they had some questions like if they had problems after the vaccination, and like also who is likely to report or who's likely to get the vaccine. So they had a little bit of a social profiling of the people who took part in the polling. And so it turns out that like most of the people who got the vaccines, they only watch the mainstream media, and they're usually very interested in like social compliance. You know, they're not really like the people who cry out loud and do something like very differently, but they want to go with the flow kind of in the crowd. Mm-hmm. And so they are likely, but yet still these people, I think 83 or something percent of them declared that they had problems after the vaccination. So we small ones and maybe larger ones, you know. But so in the end, this study came to the result that it was like 99% underreporting. I mean, so we might really be looking at much, much, much different figures. And I think it's completely absolutely underreported, like reporting with this 1,800 that what you said.
Well, the thing is, Sam, that in normal times, people estimate that only between 1 and 10% of all real cases are reported. But we are not in normal times right now.
No, it's less.
Everything is being done worldwide in the US and in Europe. Everything is being done to keep doctors from reporting. Many doctors don't even know that there's a reporting system. They don't even know VAERS in the United States. That's why Professor Wallach and others have come to and Dr. Zelenko, for example, who we spoke with, they have come to the conclusion that it's probably less than 1% that is being reported. So if we're looking at an official death toll of 1,800, we may very well be looking at completely different figures in terms of maybe 180,000 people who died after vaccination, which doesn't necessarily mean that there's causation, but you know, it doesn't make a difference. It has to be reported, and that is not being done. So ultimately, the big question is, when is enough enough?
Yeah. And on that point of, you know, the deaths not being attributable, they've made it so that there's always this element of doubt because people aren't having postmortems done.
Yeah.
Okay. That was, you know, introduced, you know, when the Coronavirus Act was passed, really, they stopped doing those. They stopped having a part two doctor as well. So in the UK, if someone is to be cremated, a second doctor, not at the same practice, would come along and review it and go and see the person in the crematorium. That's stopped as well. So there's not going to be the evidence because, again, 95% of deaths results in a cremation, not a burial. So everything is being done to disguise the true figures before you even get to the fact that these reporting systems were never robust enough for an outright clinical trial of millions, potentially a few billion people. They just can't do it. You know, it speaks of being premeditated at the very least. You know, I'm sure you've probably got to that conclusion already.
Well, we've come to that conclusion quite a while ago, except we thought that maybe there's not quite enough evidence. Well, if you look at the totality of the evidence, there's more than enough evidence. However, a very recent presentation, which I'm sure you know, done by Dr. Mike Yeadon, shows precisely how they use these different batches in order to have an experiment within an experiment, in order to try out what kind of dosage is needed in order to, this is what it looks like, in order to kill people and maim people. And I mean, this is inescapable, at least in my view as a lawyer, it is inescapable evidence of there being premeditation. And once you have premeditation, there is no immunity for anyone anymore, not even in the United States.
No. I think we should shortly have a look on this, what Mike Yeadon spoke about. I think I have, if you want, I have prepared it and you can show just for the audience too, because it's very important.
Yeah.
We speak about the vaccinations. It's not the vaccinations. It's not true that there is the same stuff in each shot. Right. And we have very, very hard evidence with the batches that they are differently, if they are shaped differently, have different effect. And I just want to show this. When we see our normal statistics, we see the following, something from the European, for instance, for the European...
Do you mind, Sam, if he jumps in and shows
us? No, not at all. We've got experts talking about what's being reported on the VAERS data. So they don't refer to batches, they refer to lots.
Yes.
They've got 11 lots with 6 or 7% of the deaths. I mean, wow.
Yeah.
You can see this here. This is what they normally show. And this is the European data. You see the people getting the jabs here, and this is the people dying. And you see there is it's not always continuously moving here, but there are like teeth going up and down. Mm. So, and you can't say a lot about this. It doesn't say anything. But if you analyze it as it was done in US with the lots and the batches, you can see much more. You can see this. There you see the table where you have the states of the United States, the 50-something states of the United States, and there you have the batches. Mm-hmm. And then you see the numbers here in this table here, and you see in some batches you see no cases. This is all people who died from those batches, and it's from each lot here. I think it's a lot. You see the numbers here, and it's in some there is nothing, nobody dies here. But then suddenly there are few where many people die, hundreds die. And then again a pause, and then again you have those people dying here. And when you have a look on this, a very close look on this, and this is what they did, then you can find such a thing. You can see here you have 9,500 different batches all here. And see on the baseline here, you see that normally nothing happens. But in some batches, you see that something happens. And this, you have the toxicity here, toxicity expressed in deaths, Kate. And this is some cases are 3,000 times more than the baseline, toxic than the baseline. And then you have batches where you're 2,500 times toxic than the baseline, and in between those single piles of death cases, there is quietness. There is nothing happens. So you have always a phases, and you this just a second.
It's probably that they're trying to reestablish a baseline in between.
It's regular. You mm-hmm. see it's linear here going down, mm-hmm. and there are less and less death cases. It is like they try to find out the doses or the effect of something, where how many people die. And mm-hmm. you can see that this is 3,000, 2,500. You have 2,000, 1,500, and 500 deaths. And it's dependent on the different batches. And this is only from Pfizer. We have a different structure with Johnson & Johnson had horrible accumulation of cases in certain batches. And we know all this. And this tells us very clearly, and each doctor should know it, that the batches are not controlled, that the doctors just use for a big experiment where they try out something. We don't know what they try out. We don't know why people die, whether it's the spikes or whether it's something else. We don't know it. Because
the bottom line is that there's, even though, of course, it is quite clear that some of the batches are, or at least on its surface, appear to be harmless. Maybe it's saline water in there, we don't know. But others are not. So this is what Mike Eden came up with. There's a 1 in 200 chance that you're going to run into one of those dangerous batches or lots. 1 in 200. So this is a game of Russian roulette you're playing. The first shot may be okay. The second may be okay. Sooner or later, they're going to get you.
It's not Russian roulette. It's a trial. It's planned. and the badges are sent somewhere, and the badges are used by, and they are all registered, and sometimes they are equally transported over the over the whole state, and sometimes there's a local spot, and it depends. And what we and what was found out too is that when one firm is doing such things, like BioNTech does it here, the other keep quiet. The other don't do their experiments. And then the next firm, the next enterprise does it with its own stuff. So they say, I want to do something, I want to try out something, and then I want to try out, then it's AstraZeneca, then it's Johnson & Johnson, and then it's Moderna. And they all have different ideas what they could try out in this very, very big trial. So all those stupid doctors think they give the same injection to everyone. It's not true. They are misused for a very big trial where there's no ethics committee. It's an obscure trial where the people are just the victims. And there are some people who have the idea that they could genetically modify something, humans, and they could perhaps, they all have patents on this stuff. Mm-hmm. And they have patents and they said, oh, I have a patent too. And now we have the new one. We shall have the new vaccine. There will be Valneva and there will be, I don't know, there are 120 new in the pipeline and they all want to try out. And now it's the time they can do it because we are afraid and we need the vaccine and we all participate in this nonsense. In this very, it is worse than Nuremberg what happens now. It is horrible. There are thousands of Mengeles now, but some of them don't know, but others know very well what they do. And they kill people. They kill thousands of people.
Intentionally.
Yes, intentionally. Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a very, very scary looking graph because, I mean, you know, this thing that it's so...
It's proof. This is a proof.
I know, but like, look, I mean, this really that it's... Yeah, you can see that it's there's nothing in between. This cannot be coincidence.
No, it is not. It cannot be.
It's a coordinated effort, or else they wouldn't do it in a synchronized way. First BioNTech, Pfizer, then Moderna, then Janssen. They're doing it in a highly coordinated way so that they will not interfere with each other. Each one of them is doing their own little experiments within an experiment. And what Wolfgang has pointed out to us, Sam, is that, of course, it's not just Mike Yeadon who knows about this, but it's the entire community. All of the pharmaceutical industry, they all know it.
So and the Paul Ehrlich Institute knows it.
Yeah, they know it. So they all want to be part
and
of it.
And they hide it.
It's only a question of time until all the others will join in and make it even worse, because it is easy to extort those who are already committing the crimes so that they, the others, will also be admitted into this, well, mass serial killing.
Yeah. Our statisticians have, two of them have got together and repeated the findings of the VAERS lots, that they call them. And then that's been repeated by teams in the US, and it's been shared collaboratively. So if it's that easily repeatable, it must be known.
Yeah.
And if perhaps you assume that it wasn't known before, and we think that it was, the very higher echelons of those who probably control governments, but it is known now. Yeah. So now it stops.
Yeah.
And if we can prove criminal intention or even gross negligence manslaughter, it may well be that those who've been harmed or those who've lost a loved one can actually get some form of compensation. Because at the moment, it's basically impossible in the UK and worldwide. And that's been the case with vaccines for a long, long time.
But I mean, it's like, you know, Wolfgang, when you said that the other companies keep quiet or are not doing anything, or the batches that they are producing at that point don't seem to be harmful, like during, at the same time where maybe the Pfizer stuff is harmful. But that then also shows, I mean, it's almost like unbelievable that there's some sort of synchronized effort. So there must be people, not only in one of the companies, but getting together and say, well, we are now using this week of first week of April, and we are using the whatever. I mean, that's I have a hard time wrapping my head around this.
It is a guy who is called Craig Paardekopper. 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 He made this work. He analyzed all this and he published it. This is what Mike Eden used, and he did it already on the 2nd of December. And it is.
Who is he? Who is he, Wolfgang?
He's some guy who's dealing with statistics, improving other. And he works close to some pharmaceutical industry, but not to this one. But he knows what happens, and it's very. I was very fascinated. I published already in December, or beginning or November. I published that this fact that 9% that only 5% of all the batches were responsible for all side effects. This was published. This was origin. But this analysis is much more detailed, and it tells something about the structure of this giant clinical trial. We are the victims, and I think this is something for state attorneys, if they are still there. I don't know, but this is something.
This is of course
where we should immediately go and get the files from Paul Ehrlich Institute.
Yeah, we're gonna. This is a legal problem, of course. Ultimately, this is a legal problem, but this makes it a whole lot easier for any lawyer in this world to show intent, because this, as I said, this is an inescapable conclusion. From these graphs, you can show intent. They are deliberately using different dosages, coordinated with each other so that they won't interfere with each other in order to try and find out what kills the best or what maims the best.
Yeah, we have those data from VAERS, which is the US with statistics, where it's easy to find out. I'm very happy that they have such a transparent system of documentation. But when you try to find out in an email, you find out you don't see it. It's very difficult to see that. You don't see the badges so easily.
You can't in the UK, Wolfgang, at the moment. So we've asked for additional information. Mm. Also, the stillbirth miscarriage data appears to end in March 21 currently.
They hided.
Yeah. And we need that. We need that urgently. Yes.
We have this law, information freedom law, where they should give us everything. They will give us preps, and they will give us files and papers. I did such a thing before with the pharmaceutical industry. They send us boxes with papers, with thousands of papers, which we had to scan to find out what was going on, to find some connection there between the data. But they will make it very, very difficult. But it would be their job to make it easy, because their job is to protect us from such criminal things.
Yeah. It's been a trend amongst the freedom of information requests to the MHRA, that the regulator here, that they've been denying some of the FOIs, and we have that, and they'll talk about things like commercial interests taking priority.
These are commercial interests. That's true.
Yeah, that's what we're concerned about.
But you know, when we spoke to people from like self-help vaccine victim groups. And it was interesting. I mean, when you compare this now to what we just discussed, like how much they're doing everything in order to help keep these the vaccine report damages reports under the carpet, you know, because they said that, you know, like some of the groups get censored immediately, like from Instagram, and after like a few weeks when it's going up and people are joining and are reporting their damages, like, or discussing them amongst themselves, you know, immediately they get censored. And what they also see, that, you know, when they go to the doctors, I mean, some of them get ridiculed or get sent from one doctor to the other, and they say, oh, there's no connection, and then they find on the internet, and are not supposed to find on the internet, what other victims report as problems. And some of them are really afraid to come forward, because they feel that, you know, if they kind of break the you know, like give away the secret that they've been harmed. That's how they feel it. You know, it's like it's their dirty little secret that they got harmed by the vaccine, you know, instead of coming out and say, wow, this has happened to me. So they get by this censorship and all this, like, you know, negative propaganda, they get so afraid that they keep it to themselves and also not seek for adequate help. You know, it's like it's a really devilish kind of circle that's going on here.
Well, that young lady that I mentioned, Chelsea Dixon, her story will be reported in the alternative media. It won't get picked up by the mainstream media.
I think I'm very sure what I just showed you, the things we spoke about, we will be wiped off from the media, from the alternative media, immediately.
Yeah.
This is what we just published. This will disappear immediately if you take it down and save it in your computer so that you can spread it. So please do it as fast as possible.
My computer got hacked as soon as I did get invited onto mainstream media, and they hacked my website as well. Very similar to what Mike Yeadon experienced. So
I see the fact checkers sweating now what they can do against this. It's such hard data. I'm very curious what they will say.
Well, Robert Malone won't be contributing to that discussion on Twitter because he's gone now. You know, so this has to end. We need a new world, new media, probably a new medical system as well, a new financial system, because that, you know, these are the people behind.
Yeah,
it.
We need a great reset. No? We are agreeing.
not that one.
these findings in particular have immense legal repercussions. Immense. Because once you arrive at the conclusion that they're doing this deliberately, intentionally, or as Martin Schwab puts it, maliciously, once you arrive at this conclusion, the floodgates are open in the United States for punitive damages.
And those data, they are present.
I know.
They are the official VERS data. There's nothing hidden. It's open. Everyone can have it.
Yes, but you have to draw the legal conclusion. And the legal conclusion is its intent. And if it's intent, you can get punitive damages. You can go up to 21 times the actual damage, which is added on top of the actual damage. In these cases, I would think you can go up to 1,000 times because these people got so badly injured. I think this is going to be enough to dismantle the entire industry.
Yes. Yeah. I couldn't agree more. I just pray that it comes a lot sooner, you know, because we are losing people every day and injuring people.
No, they will kill it. They will kill us. But it will be published. So
yeah.
No, they're not going to be.
This will just give more attention. If they would kill us now, why did they do it? What did he say before they killed him? Huh? So you have to say when you know something, you immediately have to publish it.
Yeah.
But Wolfgang, I have a question. Like with these deaths that you can see, that's basically the immediate death. So that's the only, you know, because otherwise there wouldn't be any.
Yes, you don't have the long-term effect.
No, perhaps, but like what I mean is this must be something that's added in there to immediately get, you know, that people develop like a heart attack or something. Must be like some, or like an allergic reaction.
Thrombosis and all the spike effects which come from, which come rather quickly, but you don't, or the allergic effects from side effects from something they mixed in. I don't, but you don't have the antibody-dependent enhancement in this data.
No, so it's from the nasty batches or other batches we might see long-term, say like half a year later, like this turbo cancer or some other development, you know, where then maybe can see like there's another peak after like 6 months or a year.
There's an initiative, it's called All Trials. And they are working on that all trials are announced, that they are registered, and then that they are published in a certain time. I wonder what they will do with all this.
When it finally gets opened and investigated, because I should say we had a lot of difficulty even getting a crime reference number, because that initiates a criminal investigation. The police know full well, and they've been told previously, we believe, not to give out these numbers, because they know full well, as soon as they start this investigation, it's never going to end. This is just going to be their careers, the rest of their careers, and same for the lawyers and the courts as well.
Can you do this in Ireland or in Scotland, or can you do this in different parts of Great Britain?
Well, interesting you say that, because we're working closely with Dolores Cahill, who is pushing ahead with this as well, and she's helped a lot in the work that we've done so far. But this would be UK-wide, because the MHRA, I believe, that governs also in Wales and Scotland. It took over the regulation of vaccines when the European Medicines Agency was moved back into Europe when we, went through Brexit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but I think they lost a lot of staff when that happened. No excuse, though.
No excuse. There is no excuse for any of this anymore.
No.
Okay.